Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really focusing our lens on toxicology, specifically the emergency side. You know, substances, poisons, drugs.
Yeah, it's a field where you need critical thinking, like right now. You're trying to figure out what someone took, how it's likely to harm them, and come up with a plan in minutes.
It really is a race against time, chemically speaking.
Definitely. And before we get into the how-to, we really need to nail down the language. Because honestly, in toxicology, the line between helpful and, deadly is incredibly thin.
Okay, good point. Let's start with those basics that sometimes get confused. We hear drugs, poisons, toxins. How do we separate those out?
Right. So a drug is fundamentally a substance that has a therapeutic effect, you know, when it's used correctly in the right dose.
But take too much.
And that's an overdose. Now, a poison is simpler, really. It's just any substance, could be natural, could be man-made, that damages body structures or messes with how the body works.
Okay, so like if someone drinks bleach, the bleach is acting as a poison.
Exactly. And then a toxin. That's a specific kind of poison. It has to be produced biologically.
Biologically, like from living things.
Yeah, bacteria, animals, plants. Think snake venom or botulinum toxin from bacteria. That's why we usually say toxin for those. It points to the source, which helps figure out if it was deliberate, accidental, or maybe environmental.
Got it. That clarity is super helpful.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's jump into how the body actually handles these things once they're in.
Hmm.
Pharmacokinetics, the body's timeline for chemicals. This seems critical for treatment.
Oh, absolutely critical. The treatment plan really hangs on knowing not just what was taken, but how long it's going to stick around and be active.
Right. Our sources talk about two key measurements here.
Yes. First one is bioavailability. That's the percentage of the substance that actually gets into your bloodstream unchanged. It tells you how much punch it's packing systemically.
But thinking like an ER doc, what's more pressing right then and there? How much is active now or how long it's going to stay active?
Well, for planning care, it's really the duration. That's the half-life.
Half-life.
Yeah, it's the time it takes for the average person to get rid of or metabolize 50% of the substance that's in their plasma. Mm-hmm. If something's got a half-life of, say, 20 hours...
You're in for the long haul.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know you're looking at a long admission, probably needing intensive support, no matter how okay the patient looks right now.
That's a key takeaway. Half-life basically equals commitment. And understanding that timeline is huge, especially when you think about why it happened. Was it intentional, like a suicide attempt or something criminal?
Or was it unintentional? You know, a toddler getting into cleaning supplies or maybe an accident at work.
And that context, that why, immediately points towards getting help, right?
Absolutely. This is where you call the Poison Control Center. That number, 1-800-222-1222, connects you to experts with, like, real-time data. They know about toxic potentials, weird ingredients, and the best steps to counteract the poison's effects. It's rapid intel when you're short on time. Okay, so we know how the body processes them over time. Now let's look at how they get in. The route of entry seems like it would really change the immediate danger and timeline. Four main ways,
and yeah, the path drastically changes your first moves. Ingestion is, well, the most common.
Swallowing it.
Right. And it often means a delay before you see the peak effects, although some things, like caustics, cause damage instantly. Management there is usually about stopping more absorption, maybe neutralizing it in the gut.
Then there's inhalation, breathing it in. That sounds like a much faster problem.
It is. The window for doing something is often way shorter. Absorption through the lungs is almost instant because of the huge surface area. Scene safety becomes paramount.
Meaning
if there's toxic stuff in the air, maybe aerosolized particles, responders need protection first, like an N95 or even a P100 mask before they even get near the patient. Then the priority is fixing that cellular lack of oxygen.
Okay. Third route, injection. Usually bites or stings.
Yeah, things like snakes, scorpions, jellyfish, wasps.
No.
But it also includes IV drug misuse.
And the danger there.
It bypasses all the body's normal barriers. You can get local reactions right at the site, which can be a clue. Or it goes straight into the bloodstream for systemic effects. Very fast.
And the last one is absorption through the skin. Dermal exposure.
Correct. And the sources point out that things like pesticides or organophosphates, they can be incredibly dangerous when absorbed through the skin.
So again, safety first.
Absolutely. Scene safety and decontamination are number one. If that stuff is still on the patient's skin or clothes, it has to come off. Sometimes this means calling in hazmat before you can even start patient care because the risk of responders getting contaminated is really high.
Right. Okay, scene safe. Now we assess the patient. The usual ABCs, airway, breathing, circulation apply. But it sounds like the history is maybe even more critical in toxicology.
It's hugely important. The ABCs keep them stable, sure, but the history, that tells you what you're actually fighting. We use the sample mnemonic, but we drill down with really specific questions.
Like,
what exactly did you take? When did you take it? Crucial for timing, how much? Best estimate. What else did you take? Polysubstance use is common. And then that vital context. Why? Was it intentional, accidental? Knowing the motivation helps you anticipate what else might be going on.
And once you have some idea, the basic emergency care follows. Find the access, monitor vitals, get ready for complications like shock, seizures, heart rhythm problems.
And if there is one, giving the antidote, which is just, you know, a substance that specifically counteracts that poison.
Okay, antidote, got it. Which kind of leads us to a concept that helps when the history is murky, right? The toxidrome.
Yes. The toxidrome. It's essentially a pattern recognition tool, a shortcut.
How so?
It's a set of signs and symptoms that tend to cluster together with a specific class of poisons. So even if you don't know exactly what they took, if you see a certain pattern, you can make an educated guess about the type of substance and start managing those predicted effects while waiting for labs.
Saves time, saves lives. Okay, let's break down the big ones. First, the downers. CNS depressants, things that slow the body down. Opioids are the classic here.
Absolutely classic. Opioids, opiates.
Yeah.
They depress the central nervous system. And there's that textbook triad you look for.
What's the triad?
Well, first, there's often euphoria, but it progresses to stupor or coma. Then, low blood pressure. And the big one, the killer, is respiratory depression. Slow, shallow breathing, or none at all.
And the physical clue?
The eyes. Pinpoint pupils. Miosis. If you see that combo depressed breathing, pinpoint pupils, you don't hesitate. Secure the airway, give oxygen, and administer the antidote naloxone right away.
Okay. Another major depressant is alcohol. We think about being drunk, but withdrawal. That's a whole different toxic emergency.
Oh, it's incredibly dangerous and, frankly, uses a ton of resources. Withdrawal kicks in fast. Seizures can start within, like, 12 to 48 hours after the last drink. But the real monster is delirium tremens, the DTs.
Which usually hits later.
Yeah, typically around 48 to 72 hours out.
Yeah.
And it's the body in full revolt, extreme confusion, really high fever, sweating buckets, heart racing, blood pressure all over the place. It can lead to cardiovascular collapse.
Wow. So management is...
aggressive support, cooling them down, keeping them hydrated, and crucially, calming that hyperactive nervous system, usually with hefty doses of benzodiazepines, to prevent the worst outcomes.
Okay, let's flip the script. The uppers. CNS stimulants,
mm-hmm.
making the body go way too fast.
Right. These generally push everything into overdrive, hypermetabolic state. The person's agitated, maybe anxious, pouring sweat. Pupils are wide open, dilated, and they just cannot sit still. Everything's cranked up.
Cocaine is the big one here. It floods the system with neurotransmitters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it hits fast.
Super fast. Smoked is crack. You're talking effects in maybe 8 to 10 seconds. An overdose stresses the heart and brain to the absolute limit.
Leading to things like?
Severe chest pain, feeling like you can't breathe. Psychosis is common, and a really high risk of dangerous heart rhythms, even heart attack. Management is about cooling them down quickly and using benzodiazepines to control that intense agitation. Otherwise, they can literally cause massive muscle breakdown and organ damage just from the sheer metabolic stress.
And we have to mention the synthetics, the designer versions, like synthetic ethanones, bath salts.
Ugh, yeah.
Yeah.
These are often cooked up in labs to be way more potent than the natural stuff they're based on. The presentation is like stimulant toxicity on steroids, but often much worse.
So
extreme paranoia, really vivid hallucinations, sometimes unbelievable physical strength, and that dangerous state called excited delirium. Hyperthermia, the high body temperature, is a major, major threat here.
So again, cooling.
Aggressive cooling is vital. And often massive doses of benzodiazepines are needed just to get the agitation and potential seizures under control and prevent that muscle breakdown, rhabdomyolysis.
Okay, we've hit the main toxidromes, those recognizable patterns. Now, what about toxins that are more invisible, maybe common environmental or household dangers that don't fit neatly? Let's start with gases.
Good place to start. First up, carbon monoxide, CO. The silent killer, because it's colorless, odorless, tasteless.
And its danger lies in how it affects oxygen.
Exactly. It binds to hemoglobin way better than oxygen does. So it basically kicks oxygen off the bus, meaning your blood can't carry oxygen to your tissues. cellular hypoxia.
The early signs can be tricky, though, right? Headache, feeling sick.
Yeah, very vague. Often gets mistaken for the flu. But the treatment isn't vague at all. Get them out of there immediately, away from the source, then flood them with the highest concentration of oxygen you can deliver. The idea is to force the CO off the hemoglobin with sheer volume of O2.
Okay. Contrast that with another fast-acting gas, cyanide. Different mechanism.
Totally different and just as deadly. Cyanide doesn't stop oxygen delivery. It stops cells from using the oxygen once it gets there.
So it poisons the cell's energy production.
Precisely. It blocks oxidative phosphorylation at the cellular level. Oxygen arrives, but the cell can't make energy, leading to rapid cell death. The gas might have a faint, bitter almond smell, but you can't rely on that. The effects are catastrophic fast, whatever the route.
And if you suspect it, the antidote is?
Hydroxycobalamin. The goal is to give it something else to bind to, something that grabs the cyanide and makes it harmless, letting the cells breathe again, so to speak.
All right. Moving from gases to liquids or solids, often found at home, caustics, strong acids, strong alkalis, like drain cleaners.
Yeah, these cause direct chemical burns to tissues. You'll see signs like drooling, obvious burns around the mouth, maybe they can barely talk. And if someone swallows these, the management is very specific and kind of counterintuitive.
What's the key thing to do or not do?
Key thing, if they swallowed it, you dilute immediately. Give them milk or water to drink, small sips. But, and this is critical, there's a big do not list.
Okay, what's on the list?
Do not make them vomit. Do not stick a tube down to pump their stomach, gastric lavage. And do not give activated charcoal.
Why not? Seems like you'd want to get it out.
Because these things burn on contact. Making them vomit means it burns the esophagus and throat all over again on the way up. Gastric lavage risks pushing it further or even perforating the stomach or esophagus. And charcoal just doesn't bind to caustics. It's useless here and might obscure viewing if they need an endoscopy later. So you dilute carefully and watch closely.
Makes sense. Okay, one last common household danger, but maybe a slower, sneakier one. Acetaminophen.
Tylenol.
Yes. Widely used, generally safe in normal doses, but an overdose is a classic toxicologic emergency because it unfolds slowly, often over four stages.
And the danger is that delay.
Exactly. Someone might just feel a bit unwell initially, maybe some nausea, stage one. They might not seek help until later when stage three hits, and by then, serious, potentially irreversible liver damage could be happening.
So the clock is ticking from the moment they took the pills. Absolutely. Getting an accurate time of ingestion is probably the single most critical piece of information you can get. That determines treatment with the antidote, acetylcysteine. Giving it early enough, based on the time and amount ingested, can literally save their liver.
We've covered a huge range today. Everything from pharmacokinetics, like half-life.
Right, understanding that timeline.
To recognizing those toxidrome patterns, the shortcuts.
Yes, depressants, stimulants.
And knowing some key antidotes. Naloxone for opioids. Hydroxycobalamin for cyanide, acetylcysteine for acetaminophen.
Yeah, and the scope of toxicology is just vast. We barely touched on things like poisonous plants, you know, certain mushrooms, or even bites and stings in more detail. But the core approach seen safety, get the history, support life functions that always applies. The real challenge is often just figuring out what you're dealing with.
So thinking about that challenge,
yeah.
What's the final thought for our listeners? What happens when the signs aren't clear?
I think the biggest enemy in this field, the thing that really trips people up, is the vague presentation. When the symptoms just don't scream anything specific.
Like what kind of situation?
Think about heavy metals or metalloids. Things like iron pills or arsenic exposure. Early on, they often cause really non-specific symptoms, you know, just feeling generally unwell, maybe some vomiting, some belly pain, easy to brush off.
But the consequences down the line can be massive. Iron overdose leading to shock, liver failure.
Exactly. So this difficulty in spotting the danger early when the symptoms are mild or don't fit a neat toxidrome pattern, or maybe there are no symptoms yet, that's where a lot of the serious harm, the morbidity and mortality comes from. The real deep dive, the truly critical thinking in toxicology, often begins when the obvious signs aren't there, forcing you to look deeper and anticipate potentially devastating damage that you can't see yet. Something to definitely keep in mind next time a patient's story seems just a little too simple.